This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Good afternoon, and thank you for tuning into WRFL Lexington. It's 3 o'clock, and you're listening to Green Talks, where we explore the people and projects that are using the environmental stewardship fee to promote sustainability in the UK community. I'm your host, Sophie Bevan, and I'm the current director of outreach for the Student Sustainability Council. The funding for the projects featured on our show comes from the environmental stewardship fee, a $4 fee that all UK students pay along with tuition each semester. The ESF, which is expected to generate approximately $190,000 by the end of the school year, is distributed by the Student Sustainability Council, hereafter the SSC, for various projects that enhance the culture and sustainability here at the University of Kentucky. This week, I'm joined by Stratton Hatfield, who is a graduate student researching the Marshall Eagle in Kenya. So Stratton, thanks so much for being on here today. I'm really excited that you could come, especially because you're back for a short time.
Hey, what's up, Sophie? Thanks so much for having me on.
So first, I'm just curious. You were born in Zimbabwe, so how did you end up here at UK?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. So my parents are both originally from Kentucky, and they're actually both graduates from UK. And I still have a grandmother here in eastern Kentucky. So when I graduated from high school in Kenya, that's another long story how we got from Zimbabwe to Kenya. It was very logical for me to look at the University of Kentucky as a school. And very excited to have come back here and now to be doing grad school here. So
yeah, that's nice that you still also have family here, so you're not just
absolutely completely
alone over here.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great being able to spend time with my grandmother. And I also have an aunt in northern Kentucky. So
perfect.
Yeah,
that's really handy.
Yeah.
So right now you're living in Kenya and doing research on the Marshall Eagle. So how did you get the opportunity to do this, especially since you're a grad student at Kentucky?
Yeah, so I did my undergrad here in natural resources and conservation management. And when I finished up that program, I was given an opportunity to do some work in the Maasai Mara in southern Kenya. And I took the opportunity. It was a dream of mine. And while I was working there, I was working in the tourism sector. I was out there one day working in the conservancy that I was in. And I got a call about some guys wanting to come and put a transmitter on a Marshall Eagle. And I thought, I need to go check that out and help them out. And
yeah,
so,
definitely.
Yeah, so I went out and we helped tag this Marshall Eagle. And at the, during my undergrad, I formed a strong friendship with Dr. John Cox in the Department of Forestry. And he had been like, hey, if you ever find a really good project that I could come and partner on, I'd be really interested in hearing more about it. So I realized this Marshall Eagle project needed some support from outside, some partnership. And so I wrote Dr. Cox and connected Dr. Cox with Dr. Munir Virani of the Peregrine Fund and Dr. Ralph Bau from the Wageningen University in the Netherlands. And so the project was born. And I came back to UK and the rest is history.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's like, how can you pass up an opportunity to be a part of that? So that's really cool.
Yeah, I'm a big bird guy. So
yeah, that's what I've heard. So how did you get interested in birds? Like, do you have like a certain specialty with them or anything?
I guess I have my parents to thank for that, really. They sought to introduce me to the environment at a very young age. And at 2 to 3 years old, I was out with elephants and lions and buffalo and giraffe, and I quickly fell in love with large mammals. And by the age of 6 or 7, it was only natural to transition to birds. And I guess I've just been a bird lover ever since, and I've traveled the world looking for birds. And I think in doing that, I've become aware that a lot of different bird species are in great need of conservation attention, and that we're losing a lot of them globally. And so the opportunity to contribute on a project, especially a raptor, an apex predator,
awesome. You just hop right on that.
Yeah, for sure.
And I've also heard that you can identify birds just by listening to them. So is it like any bird? You just automatically know what it is?
Not any bird. So there's around 10,000 species, give or take, around the world. And it's just kind of like music, right? So a lot of young people listen to a lot of different music. And just by hearing, you know, a few words of a song, a few lyrics, a few beats, they can say that's that song and that's that artist. And for me, it's like that with birds. You know, after I hear a few birds calling, over time you learn their call and you can say, okay, yeah, that's a blue-winged warbler or a cerulean warbler or something like that.
That's a very good talent. So, I like that.
It's a lot of fun. So.
So now to just kind of talk about the Marshall Eagle, can you just give us some background on it and what exactly you're researching about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Marshall Eagle is one of Africa's largest eagle species. They inhabit kind of that savanna ecosystem that Africa is so famous for. They're massive. So we're talking like 8.5 foot wingspans for a large female. They don't weigh very much, but most birds don't weigh much. From a bird perspective, they weigh a lot, I should say.
Okay.
But we're talking like 10 to 12 pounds for a big female and like 8 to 10 pounds for a little male. And I should actually say 7 to 8 pounds for a little male.
I mean, yeah, that still sounds like a lot for a bird.
So. Yeah, it's a big bird. I think what's very impressive about them is the size of their foot. So a female's, hind talon is around 6 centimeters at its longest, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Like it's a dagger.
And, yeah.
I think what's sad about raptors in general in Africa is that they're declining really quickly across their range. And so Marshall eagles are apex predators, so they occupy, you have those pyramids you learn about in biology class, they're right on top.
Yeah.
And they require a vast area as their home, and they require a huge amount of resources, and we're losing that in Africa every single day, all over the world.
Yeah.
And so we don't really know how quickly they're declining. A paper out of South Africa talked about declines anywhere from 40 to 70%. And South Africa is arguably one of the more protected countries. So this project was born out of a need to understand the species ecology so that we can best inform its conservation. And there's a project as well ongoing in South Africa that complements our work in East Africa. And so,
So is the decline... Like, I don't know if you've concluded anything yet, but have you found that the decline is mostly due to climate change or, like, habitat loss or just lack of protection?
That's an interesting question. I think the big answer right now is we don't know, but we have a lot of good ideas.
Okay.
And so, we do know. And the biggest issue is habitat destruction. I mean, you've got population growth in Africa is really, really high.
Yeah.
And with that comes the need for a growing human population. They need resources. And so cutting down, vast areas of forests, plowing under huge areas of savanna. And you can't blame people for that. That's just part of it. People are trying to survive. But with that comes consequences, and that's a huge loss in wildlife. I think your climate change question is very interesting. I think right now the big threat to wildlife, to biodiversity in general in Kenya and Africa is, habitat loss.
Yeah,
But I think climate change is kind of lingering in the background as an unknown. I was speaking to Dr. Bert Toxopus from the University of Enschede in the Netherlands, and he was talking about how climate change, where I work on Marshall Eagles, is manifesting itself very interesting. We used to have two very prominent rainy seasons, and one is in April and May, and the other is in October to November. And what we're seeing over the last 10, 20 years is that those rainy seasons are not as pronounced as they used to be.
Okay.
Our rain is falling more sporadically throughout the year and is actually increasing. But what that's doing is it's not allowing our grass to grow like it used to, which is having huge impacts. There's this cascade effect. And we think that's affecting Marshall Eagles. It must affect Marshall Eagles.
Yeah, because that impacts the bottom of the food chain and it works its way up.
It affects their prey.
Yeah.
And so, the big answer is, from a statistical perspective, we don't know, right? We haven't run the numbers.
Yeah.
But just from observations.
That's like the general idea of what you think is going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So none of these forces work in isolation, right?
Yeah,
so
they're all compounded
on
each other.
They're all compounded together. Yeah.
So where in Kenya are you conducting this? Like, are you on a reservation or like a protected area?
No, I've thrown around Masai Mara a lot, and my apologies. I should have introduced the area earlier.
It's okay.
So in southwestern Kenya, there is a reserve called the Masai Mara National Reserve, and it's essentially the northern kind of portion of the Serengeti ecosystem. And, if you watch National Geographic or any of those channels and you see all these wildebeests, jump into the Mara River and crocodiles eat them. And, it's lions, and Big Cat Diary was filmed there. So it's a very iconic and famous ecosystem. The thing about the Mara that's so interesting is it's actually quite a small area in Kenya, and it's surrounded by lots of community-owned land. And that land is owned by primarily by the Maasai people.
Okay.
And what's amazing is that the Maasai people in these areas are leasing their land for conservation.
Oh,
and
that's awesome.
And so you've got the reserve, and then you've got these community-owned wildlife conservancies outside of it. And so, that's my study area.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Cool. So, what does your normal day look like when you're doing this study? Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, my normal day. So I have the vehicle that I drive is a Land Rover Defender, and it's like a box British military Land Rover. And on the top, I've got a rooftop tent. And so I drive around the Mar looking for martial eagles. Sometimes I have the help of the Kenya Bird of Prey Trust from Shiv Kapila and Simon Thompson. They come out and help me catch eagles and put camera traps in nests. And we go find martial eagle kills and see what they're eating. And like I said, my partner, she works on the Mara Cheetah Project. And
okay.
So sometimes we base with Nick and Nick Elliott and Femke Brookhouse, the directors of the Mara Cheetah and Lion Project. But yeah, that's pretty much it. I just live out of my car.
And that's awesome.
Roam around and hang out with some other researchers.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, so that's another question. Is it just mainly you, or you have a team with you?
The Serengeti especially, there's been an immense amount of work done on the Serengeti.
Okay.
And in the Mara, there's an incredible team of researchers working as well. When it comes to raptors in particular, Dr. Munir Virani, Dr. Corin Kendall, Simon Thompson, Shiv Kapila, they've been working on vultures there for quite some time. But I should say non-scavenging raptors, there's been very little work done. So there's a big team, but in my field, there's kind of a vacuum.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So, are there any major challenges that come with this? Like, anything that pops to your mind?
Right now in Kenya, there's elections coming up at the end of October. So, it's a little bit of political instability in the country. And I'm hoping for justice and peace. And that, of course, affects my work greatly.
Yeah.
In the Mara as a whole, there's huge pressures in the Mara from livestock to... I don't know. You've got tourism businesses trying to compete for money. You've got local communities demanding certain things. You've got human wildlife conflict. I mean, there's an enormous number of issues that affect the work that I do.
Yeah.
For me personally, on a personal level, I'm just hoping to continue my work and find some PhD funding somewhere. So if anyone knows, you can call in and help out, right?
Yeah,
so.
Give some suggestions if anyone has any.
Any suggestions.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was about to ask, too, because this already sounds like a dream job. So what would be your ultimate goal, or what are your plans after this?
I think one of the big things in biology and in conservation that a lot of people forget is that I think working in the same system for a long period of time is what really brings results.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you just come in and leave, I don't think you're actually contributing much.
Yeah.
So I would like to continue work on this project into the future.
Yeah, definitely.
Whether that's, after my PhD, whether that's in a faculty position somewhere, or whether that's more on the ground, I would even be open to tourism in that area.
Okay.
Because tourism supports conservation there, or sustainable tourism supports conservation. But I really believe in sticking to an area and investing huge amounts of time and effort into building relationships and people. I mean, we say we work with birds, but it's really just all about people.
Yeah, so. Definitely.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, well, we are going to take a quick break and then we will be right back.
Awesome.
Hello and thank you. We're back on Green Talks. And with us today, we have Stratton, who is currently a grad student at UK. And he's living in Kenya, but he's back and he's doing a research project on the martial eagle. So just to hop back in, Stratton also was an undergrad here and he was a part of the Student Sustainability Council. So just do you have anything, or how did the council help you as an undergraduate student, or what was your experience like?
Well, I think, thanks for the question, Sophie. I think the SSC, it really is a unique and incredible body on campus. I mean, where else on campus can a group of like-minded individuals, or actually I shouldn't say like-minded, we're very different on the council actually, come together and manage such a large pool of money and essentially help guide that money so that it improves sustainability on campus and in our community. It was an incredible opportunity and I learned so much. And it's just awesome. if you're thinking about being a part of the SSC, just apply. It's way too cool.
Yeah, we actually just opened our applications for the midterm elections.
Yeah,
so that is another opportunity. If anyone is interested in being a part of the Student Sustainability Council, you can send a resume and cover letter, and then you will have the opportunity to serve.
Well, and also, if you're out there and you have a project or an idea or just a dream on campus that's sustainability related, you know, you should go online and look at their website. I have no idea what it is right now, but I'm guessing if you type in Student Sustainability Council UK, you'll find it.
Yeah, it will definitely pop up.
And the application process is very accommodating, and just give it a shot.
So. Yeah, for sure. And how did it help you, like, as a grad student with this project?
Yeah, so I applied for some money from the SSC before I went to Kenya, and that money essentially funded my vehicle maintenance, which was huge. You know, for me, that was my wheels to be able to do my project. And so what I always think is incredible is students in Kentucky are supporting conservation work in Kenya. And it's awesome that I have, like, University of Kentucky stickers on my car. And
people on
holiday from the States are driving around and they're like, what in the world is a University of Kentucky sticker
like,
doing on
that?
How did
this get here?
Yeah, and they're always, you know, talking basketball with me. And I don't know much about basketball. Yeah. But I think it's really cool. And it was fun. I was able to do some Skype conversations with some students in the forestry department while I was over there. And it was fun to answer their questions. And it's really cool.
So, yeah, that's cool how it's like you were on an undergrad. Now it's still with you as a grad student.
Yeah, absolutely. And the SSC really gave me, I'm very grateful to them for the support. And,
definitely. And people like Shane Tenner, of course, over here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're trying to draw Shane into this over here. I'm just kidding. But so kind of just like back to birds.
Yeah.
What is your favorite bird or any cool birds in particular?
I've got to say the Marshall, right? Because
for sure,
that's what I'm studying right now. And it would be crazy. I know more about Marshalls than any other species at this time.
That makes sense.
And I think the thing about eagles that's so amazing is that they have a personality.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really get to know individuals. And so when you're out in the field and you come across a Marshall eagle and you look at it, you immediately know that's so-and-so.
Yeah.
And they look at you in different ways. And
that's
you
crazy.
You can look at them and move your head, and they'll look at you and move your head. And they can – we caught a female. There's a colleague of mine. His name is Shiv. We caught a female twice.
Okay.
And so she learned our vehicle. She learned my voice. She learned the way I looked incredibly well. And now she just can't stand me.
That's crazy. I did not know that they had the ability to do that.
Incredible. They're so smart. And they can live also really long. So we're talking, 30, 40 years, potentially much older. So 50, 60 years.
That's insane.
And we just don't know. But I've got another colleague, Simon Thompson. He's a falconer, and he has two crowned eagles that he's had since he was a little kid, and he's 56. So I think his crowned eagle, her name is Girl. It's not very creative.
Yeah.
She's in her 40s, and she's
that's crazy.
And she's flying fit. And she's awesome.
That's so cool. Wow.
Yeah.
Does he do research, or is he just kind of using like a pet? Like
Simon Thompson, you should look him up. He's one of the most incredible human beings on this planet. His knowledge of raptors is it's just incredible.
Yeah.
African raptors. I'll specify. There are other people elsewhere, and been an incredible mentor and teacher to me. And he's a very ethical falconer and involved actively in conservation.
That's awesome.
So,
do you have any favorite moments so far with your experience in Kenya?
I have to admit, catching the first Marshall eagle was incredible.
Yeah,
that first time that you hold a bird in your hand and you smell it, Marshall eagle smell. And
good or bad?
Yeah, it's an amazing smell.
Okay.
I wouldn't say I'd wear it as a cologne, but you know,
it's
like if you're a horse person and you're near a horse, that smell in a barn, you know.
Yeah, it's just like really familiar.
Yeah, and so I love the smell of Marshall eagles. And I love feeling how strong they are. You know, after you hood them and you have the bird in your hand and you're processing the bird and you're taking measurements, it's just incredible. They're just magnificent birds of prey.
Yeah.
Another favorite memory is Simon was teaching me how to climb a tree to place a camera trap in a Marshall eagle nest.
Okay.
And I was belaying him from below on a rope, and a hippo came out of the bushes and charged us.
Oh, how did you get out of that?
Trying to figure out how to get him down safely and, you know, unclip myself without dropping him and get to safety as this hippo's coming in was quite fun. It all worked out.
Quite fun. That's a really good attitude about it.
Yeah. I have so many good memories from the last year in the field. They're just crazy. I mean, lots of bad memories too. Lots of car breakdowns.
Yeah.
And very frustrating nights been on the side of the road and stuck in the mud. And yeah, so.
And so you said you were there for a year. Was it a full year or?
Yeah, it's pretty much a full year. I took some off time, but yeah, it was pretty intense full year. And we were able to catch and tag 20 adult marshall eagles.
That's
which is for marshall eagles, that's a huge sample size.
Yeah.
And lots of camera traps at nests and lots of good data we've got.
Yeah.
I know that's something that people say too much, but we got a lot of good data.
Yeah.
So exciting.
Yeah, I mean, how can you not though, especially like with that kind of experience? It's so different from anything that people would typically do. So
well, it's a unique and it's a needed project, and I'm just happy to have had the opportunity to be a part of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So I'm just like really curious, how do you catch a Marshall Eagle? Like, how do you even do that?
Yeah. So first off, I'll preface this by saying it's all Iacocca approved. but we have a trap. It's an old falconer's trap.
Okay.
I think it originated either in India or in the Middle East, but it's called a balchatri. And what it consists of is a cage with nooses or snares all around the cage. And then you put your bait in the cage. So the bait remains unharmed. And as the bird hits the cage and is trying to catch, you know, whatever you put in there. For us, it was chickens.
Okay.
It gets caught. Its feet get caught in the nooses.
Oh, okay.
And, So.
And so it doesn't harm the bird in any way. Like, it's just, like, gets their feet.
No. The way that these traps were built, once again, Simon Thompson and Shiv Kapila taught me how.
Yeah.
But they've taught me how to build very ethical nooses. And, yeah, so we never had a problem, never had an injury, never had anything.
Yeah,
so,
that's good. Sounds very safe, which is good.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun when you get out of the car and you run towards the bird on the trap.
Yeah.
And the bird is flapping and you're trying to, you know,
like
catch
hold it down,
yeah,
like
yeah.
make it stand still.
Yeah, it's adrenaline rush for sure.
Yeah, that's cool. So then you just like tag them and mark them, and then are you continually to like track them?
Yeah, so we're putting, I tell you, Dr. Ralph Bau from the University of Wageningen connected us to a gentleman by the name of Theo Gerrits. He's an engineer in the Netherlands.
Okay.
And he designs transmitters, backpack transmitters. So when we would catch a bird, we would fit one of these backpack transmitters on the birds. And these transmitters collect data at really frequent intervals.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're able to amass a huge amount of data in a very short period of time. So we're currently sitting at around 1.9 million locations for Marshall Eagles, which is huge.
That's
so,
a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot of data.
Yeah. So you're just trying to track it and like see its progression over time and if it's...
Yeah. So for number one, we're just looking at what the home range, simple question. So what is the home range of a Marshall Eagle?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm really interested in habitat selection.
Okay.
So habitat selection is essentially, you know, what areas does a Marshall Eagle require to survive, right? So what are the resources it's choosing?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really interesting, especially in a landscape that's increasingly being developed.
Yeah, so, you're seeing like the differences in its range and where it's going and things.
Well, just so are Marshall Eagles essentially selecting against humans and their settlements communities?
Wow.
Are they selecting for a certain habitat type?
Yeah.
Or a habitat structure? I think structure is something that we don't often think about,
yeah.
but like edge effects. So like forest next to grassland versus just thinking about grassland in isolation or forest in isolation.
Yeah.
Do they like slope? Certain hillsides, because you got to imagine the birds are flying, so when wind kicks up a slope, it's a really nice place to fly.
Yeah.
And so what is that magical combination of everything that makes the perfect Marshall Eagle habitat?
Yeah, so many factors that lead to like the optimal conclusion for these birds.
Yeah, and I mean, Marshall Eagles can kill goats and sheep and chickens. And so there's a human-wildlife conflict element as well.
Okay.
So also trying to look for those areas that Marshall Eagles might come into conflict with people. And trying to come up with a plan that we can prevent that conflict.
Yeah. So is that a big problem there? Like, do people...
So from the data we currently have, from the birds we've tagged, I would say that human-wildlife conflict is a very small problem with marshall eagles.
Okay.
I don't have a lot of evidence to say that they're killing goats, sheep, or chickens frequently, just a few odd cases. However, we did have one marshall eagle poisoned for killing sheep and goats, but it was not technically in our study area. It was the pair that was just boundary our study area. So,
So unfortunately, I couldn't do much about that.
Yeah.
So are you done with this study or are you heading back or?
So I head back in January for 2 months
and,
to continue collecting data and then, looking to grow the project, more funding.
Yeah.
And, continue to collect data. Like I've said before, I think continuing to collect data is something that we just failed to do.
And
especially for such a long-lived species, you really need a massive data set in order to say anything relevant about, for instance, their demographics and survivorship and things like that. We just don't have that data yet.
Yeah, so, for sure.
Yeah.
So right now, in the few months that you're here, what are you doing? Are you in classes or just speaking?
Yeah, so I'm not in classes. I'm writing and analyzing data.
Okay.
So I'm, for those of you familiar with the statistical software R, I'm in over my head in R and having a lot of fun looking at my data. So
nice. That's exciting. Yeah. Are you like happy to be back for a break or
Absolutely.
Are you?
Absolutely. I love Kentucky and I love UK. And the UK has provided me an enormous number of opportunities, especially Dr. John Cox in the forestry department. And so it's always great being back. And I love walking around campus and, just hanging out in Lexington. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
So I guess just as like a final question, do you have any advice for people who are interested in conservation or anything like what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said before, I think in conservation, I think Wendell Berry, I don't know, for those of you, I'm going to talk about Wendell Berry because Wendell Berry is a great guy. But there's that whole idea of finding, finding that place and staying there and being a part of that place. And so within conservation, I would encourage people not just to jump around and move around so quickly. I see how some people can do that and be very effective at that. But by and large, I think finding one area, focusing on that, dedicating yourself to that, investing time and effort, if you really want to make an impact, building relationships with people. And, that's what matters.
So, awesome. Yeah. Wow. Well, Stratton, it was so great to have you on. This has been awesome.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, and big thanks to the SSC for funding part of my project.
Yeah. So. So just for some closing announcements, once again, if you're interested in serving on the council next semester, we are now accepting applications for the midterm elections. So, to do that, you just submit a resume and cover letter explaining your interest and commitment to sustainability. And those applications can be sent to UK Student Sustainability Council@gmail.com by midnight on Sunday, October 29th. And more information is on our website if you would like to know more. And we are also still providing funding for departments on campus to invite a guest speaker for their students. So if you're interested or want to know more, please email us. And also, you can stay up to date on the SSC by following us on Facebook and Instagram, and also on our website has all of our meeting dates and agendas, so you can also stay up to date with us there. And so, I'll be back next week to talk to students who attended the ASHI Sustainability Conference this weekend, so we can hear more about their experience and takeaways. As always, thanks for listening.
Hey there! If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.